You are listening to KWMR Putley Station. I am Alexander McQuilkin.
And my name is Michael McQuilkin. And the reason I listen to KWMR is because they put on the Family Music Hour show for your listening pleasure.
I love to listen to all family singers.
KWMR's programming is brought to you by The Pacific Sun, online at pacificsun.com. That's pacificsun.com. Take KWMR with you. When you're headed beyond the forests, beaches, and hidden hollows of West Marin, go online to www.kwmr.org and click on the play button to stream us live, whenever, wherever. It's your favorite radio to go.
This is Epicenter on KWMR West Marin Community Radio. Epicenter is rebroadcast Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m., featuring a wide array of community and public affairs. I'm your host, Jeff Manson, and today we are going to be hearing from Aaron Carruthers, who is the Executive Director of the State Council on Developmental Disabilities in Sacramento. He'll be joined by local Marin County leaders of the disabled community, and we'll be discussing Marin County vaccine advocacy for folks with developmental disabilities. And this is a Zoom, which was recorded a couple days ago. And here it is.
Okay, so now I'd like to welcome another good friend of mine, Aaron Carruthers, who's the Executive Director of the State Council on Developmental Disabilities. He has worked in civil rights programs for over 20 years, including in the State Senate for the California Attorney General's Office, and as appointee of two governors. He is currently carrying out the council's goals of housing, employment, and safety. Last year, the State Council on Developmental Disabilities impacted more than 4 million Californians and was named Employer of People with Disabilities of the Year. He is the graduate of the National Leadership Curriculum on Developmental Disabilities. And he is currently serving on the Statewide Advisory Committee. And he's going to talk about some of his work and some things that are happening on the state level and some possible advocacy opportunities. Take it away, Aaron.
Peter, thank you so much. Thank you for that nice introduction. And thank you, as always, for your leadership and the continued partnership for all that we keep finding to do together. We keep finding some good trouble, so that's good. Renee, thank you so much for that firsthand experience about what it's like to get the vaccine. We need to know the policy. We need to know what's going on in the real world. And I'm excited to see there's over 170 people here. I'm sure a lot of you were like me doing some storm cleanup this morning just to move about. There was a whole lot of trees down around here. And I know it took a lot just to get out of the house this morning. So if you're out of the house, you're calling from the house, or whatever you had to do today just to make it here, to be together in this moment, I really want to acknowledge that and thank you for that. So hello, I am the Executive Director of the State Council on Developmental Disabilities here in Sacramento. And I know that many of you work with Sheridan Nicolau in our Oakland office, who covers Marin and the larger Bay Area region. So I appreciate all of the great partnership we're able to do locally in the region. Today, I want to start off with a message of hope. And it's from California's Surgeon General, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, who says there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And today we're here talking about how do we get there from here? The lights appeared, some of us are moving toward it. There's a whole lot of bumps in that tunnel. So I do want to tell you about the Community Vaccine Advisory Committee that Peter mentioned that I'm a member of. I want to make sure that we have a direct connection with each other here today to share information. Part of that is me sharing with you what we know and what we don't know. There's been a few advocacy successes. There's definitely some work for more, and I'm just so grateful to be here to hear and listen from your experiences. So where are we now? Here's a chart that the state is using to show the COVID cases from tracking beginning of March 1st, 2020 through, boy, there's some funny punctuation there, isn't it? January 24th, 2021. And what you can see there is that we had that spike in July that we thought was a pretty bad spike. Initially, lots of alarms, everybody flatten the curve. Then we had another summer spike, and we thought that was a bad one. But then here comes the winter spike. So whatever curve we were trying to flatten, hopefully that's the biggest curve we're going to see. But the point that the Department of Public Health has been making in their presentations is to notice that the winter spike seems to be decreasing. That's the current trend for it. As of January 25th, the state had administered 41 million tests, so seeing if people have COVID. And of those 41 million tests, there were 3,153,186 positive cases of COVID tracked by public health systems and surveillance throughout the state. Among those, unfortunately, there have been 37,527 deaths. So for doses and vaccines, as of January 25th, there's been shipped to the state 3,319,000 doses. And administered, there's 2,587,736 doses administered as of Monday, January 25th. So that still leaves a room about 750,000 doses on Monday that were still in the pipeline that the state had received, were still in the process of getting out to being administered. The daily rate of vaccinations, the state is up to about 125,000 people vaccinated per day. That's a tripling of doses from where we were at the beginning of the month. The governor put out an order and a challenge to try to get 1 million people vaccinated in a 10-day period. And that'd be, 100,000 people a day, but the state's ramped up its production, isn't exceeding that at 125,000 people per day. Of the 2,587,000 people who've received a vaccine, we've just crossed over, or we're close to the state's close to the threshold of 500,000 people who've received the second dose. So about 2 million have received a first dose and 500,000 have received the second dose. What do we hope for doses overall? So at the end of January 2021, hoping for the state to receive 4 million doses, and by the end of April, hoping to receive 20 million doses. It looks like we're on track to meet that dosage amount for California. Each week, we receive between 300 to 400,000 doses. So I'm checking my calendar. We may not meet the 4 million doses for the end of January, but that's about the rate that they're coming into California. I am a member of the Community Vaccine Advisory Committee. It's been created under the Department of Public Health. The Department of Public Health, for its vaccine work, has created three work groups and three committees. One's a Scientific Safety Review Work Group, and that is a team of California's independent scientists to look at the safety and review the information that comes out about the vaccines. This group is so well-staffed and so well-regarded and esteemed that it broadened out to be the Western States Collaborative. So my understanding is there's 100 independent scientists who are part of that who review the science. From that, there's also the Drafting Guidelines Work Group that comes up with the priorities. We've been talking about phases. We've been talking about priorities and tiers. That's the group that is in charge of writing those up. And I'm on the Community Vaccine Advisory Committee that has 70 members. Fortunately, among those 70, there are five members representing disability advocates. I'm really, really grateful for the strong collaboration and really kind of a front that we've all presented. And that is Christina Mills from the California Federation of Independent Living Councils, Sylvia Yee from DREDIF, Andy Imperato from Disability Rights California, and my good friend from Justice and Aging, whose name just popped out of my head, so I so apologize. But Justice and Aging has been a stalwart, fantastic advocate who comes from the aging perspective, but has been there with the disability community throughout. So I want to tell you what my focuses have been so far on the committee, and that's that the vaccine needs to be a priority for people with intellectual, developmental, and other disabilities. Now, notice I am the executive director of the State Council on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, but my advocacy position on this is that it needs to be available for people broader than just people with IDD. There is science and there is impact of this disease's terrible impact on people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, but also broader. And from that point of view, we, the State Council in its leadership, and my advocacy has stayed stalwart that the advocacy we're doing is for people with disabilities who are impacted by COVID. And that is broader than just people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It's broader than just people with Down syndrome. The next priority is that the vaccine be a priority for caregivers, whether those caregivers are paid or not, whether they're family or not. And we talk a little bit later about successes. We've got some good early successes there. Priority has been that the vaccine safety for people with complex medical conditions and interactions with other drugs. We have to know that there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy, and our community has many, many reasons to have vaccine hesitancy. Part of it is just the complex medical conditions people are managing on a day-to-day basis. And we just need to know how do these vaccines interact with our conditions. There are other communities that have a lot of reasons for vaccine hesitancy, and we're seeing that throughout African-American community in particular. And the state and our roles have a lot of work to do to just get people information so they can make the best decisions for themselves. From my point of view, that's the best thing we can do regarding vaccine hesitancy. And part of that is my last piece, which is informed consent. People need to know what's happening. People need to know what's proposed in that needle and what's maybe put into them. And they need to be able to have the information they need to give consent for the vaccine. So just a little bit of a review. We know the vaccines have been approved on December Friday, 11th. The FDA approved the Pfizer vaccine on Thursday, December 19th. The FDA approved Moderna vaccine. Also important to know there's three other vaccines that are in phase three clinical trials in the USA. AstraZeneca has one, Janssen has one, and Novavax has one. How they work. This may all be old news to you, but I still think it's useful to review, which is both Moderna and Pfizer are similar. They use a genetic code to stimulate the body's immune response specifically against the COVID-19. So think of those little spikes off of the picture of COVID. That's what they respond to. It was developed on a computer. So this is unique that it's complete computer simulation is how they figured it out. No cells were used in the creation of it. What's put into your arm is something that is a genetic design. There's no live or attenuated or inactive virus. It's not protein-based. It's not a DNA-based vaccine. Many groups I talk to have allergies and really want to know what's in it. I always like to present what the ingredients are. So the Pfizer vaccine has a few more ingredients. The main ingredient is the mRNA, and that's the piece that's designed on the computer. After that, there's a series of lipids that they have created, potassium chloride, monobasic potassium phosphate, sodium chloride, dibasic sodium phosphate dihydrate, and sucrose. So I'll leave that up for just a second and fill some time so people can review the ingredients, because if there's something you know that you're allergic to, you'll want to see it in this list. Anything beyond the mRNA is just used to transport the mRNA. So these ingredients are in small doses, but it still may be important to you based on your allergies, and specifically if you have a diagnosis of anaphylaxis. The Moderna vaccine has a few fewer ingredients, and there's few that's in that transportation of it. So the mRNA is still there, and it's the first ingredient. Then they also have their own proprietary list of lipids. And then it has I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, but it's a trace buffer containing sucrose and sodium. So I'm not a scientist and asked what all these things mean. And the answer was that mainly the vaccine includes fats, salts, and sugars. So there's the genetic material, then there's fats, salts, and sugars that move the mRNA, which is what is used to boost our immune system. Some things we know about the vaccine: it needs to be shipped and stored cold. We've heard all of this. We know this. We also know that both of these, you need two doses for full immunity. After you get the first one, you're about 50% immunity. You need the booster to get you to 94-95% immunity, and they are 21 to 28 days apart, depending upon if you get Pfizer or you get Moderna. You come back 3 weeks or 4 weeks later for the booster shot. It is not known if the vaccine prevents transmission, so we don't. It may not. It's just not known. So we don't know whether or not people who are vaccinated can still spread the virus. This is important as it relates to caregivers who come into home. If somebody has IHSS and that caregiver has decided to get vaccinated, they are in phase 1A, can they still spread it? So anywhere we go, anything happening or coming to our house, everybody is still recommended to keep up the good practices of wearing face masks, wash hands, and keep 6 feet apart. Until we know the impacts. Just kind of a peek into some of the clinical trials for Pfizer. At least there were 40,000 trial participants. 10,000 of the participants were Latinx or Hispanic, 3,500 African-American, and 1,600 Asian. Among the comorbidities or other illnesses, among the clinical trial participants, obesity, diabetes, respiratory illnesses, and cardiac problems. So we're going to circle back when we talk later about whether or not the vaccine is safe. Their children were not included in the clinical trials. Therefore, the Pfizer vaccine is approved for people 16 and over. Moderna is approved for people 18 or older. And both companies have begun clinical trials on younger people, and they're doing it in cohorts. So for Pfizer, for example, they're looking at a cohort of 15 to 14, and then another cohort of 13 to 12. The reason is this vaccine works on people's immune systems, and children's immune systems just function differently. So they just don't know yet how it would work. Side effects. Renee gave us a really good overview of those side effects. It hurts. It hurts in the arm. The injection site, 92% of people, at least in the Pfizer one, reporting a pain at the injection site. And then fatigue, headache, muscle pain. I don't know about you, but when I feel fatigue, headache, and muscle pain, I think I'm getting sick. I think I'm coming down with something. My body says, oh, you're getting sick. Something's happening. But I've been told by the scientists over and over again is actually the body's building up the immunity and the response. So it's doing its job and doing what it's supposed to be doing when I'm feeling this way. I haven't gotten the injection. You know, I'm a male under 50 with a disability that would not be severely impacted by COVID. So while I'm fighting for others to be higher up on the party list, I'm going to wait. So I haven't seen this, but if you get the injection and you get these side effects, you're not coming down with it. Nothing's making you sick. It's just your body responding. I'm building up the immunity. When they did the injections, they said there just wasn't a lot of anaphylactic or severe hypersensitivity reactions. I think that they've seen some more since then. And if you are somebody who's specifically allergic to some of those ingredients, you're recommended to either try to get the one that doesn't have the ingredients you're allergic to or to not take it at this point. It does believe the current versions to be effective against the recent mutated strain, although I think that holds true both for the mutation out of the UK and the mutation out of California. We're in a state of scarcity. We're in a state of scarcity, and the state is setting priorities. That's a lot of what the policy and advocacy work on the Community Vaccine Advisory Committee has been. There's just not enough supply to immunize all people who are willing to accept the vaccine. That's taken directly from some of the Department of Public Health's language, and I think it's really important because I often get questions about a mandatory program. Mandatory immunizations. At this point, it's still about people who are willing to accept the vaccine. Still about consent is needed. And I have not seen, have not heard any conversations about mandating the vaccine. So the state is looking to craft what they feel is a fair, equitable, and evidence-based prioritization of people who are offered the vaccine initially until the manufacturing capacity catches up with demand. And hopefully we're seeing some of that. Every day it's a different news story. I saw that there's another company who's offering to help manufacture Pfizer's vaccine to help boost the availability throughout the country. I saw that one yesterday. I thought that was interesting to get more vaccines out there. We know phase 1A includes healthcare workers and long-term care residents. Healthcare workers are in there because they play the role in maintaining the rest of the healthcare system, whether people need the help from COVID because they're ill with COVID or they're ill with something else or just need care for other reasons. Here's a success. Our advocacy on the Community Vaccine Advisory Committee was for a very broad, inclusive definition of healthcare workers. And so phase 1A includes this phrase of home health care and in-home supportive services. Notice that phrase is not capitalized. So it's not home health care formal. It's not IHSS formal. It's anybody who's providing a service that fits that description. So the Department of Social Services has released a letter to help those who are giving in IHSS services put this into practice. And I think it's been pretty universal. That's been smoother. Department of Developmental Services more recently released a letter for regional centers to use with vendors. But also importantly, those who are family members and who are giving home health care. That letter doesn't say you have to be paid to do it. And that's the right policy. We're seeing people have a little bit more difficulty in implementing that. And I know I've been on the phone with people who are sitting in vaccine appointments being turned away and having to argue and fight to get them to get the vaccine in their arm that day. Some of you may be seeing something similar. So in setting priorities, the governor stated this week that we now are at, it was healthcare and over 75. We're now at anybody over 65 plus essential workers in education and childcare. People providing emergency services or first responders or people doing food and agriculture. So that's a whole big wave of people who are now eligible. We see that where do people with disabilities pop up? It's in this kind of phase 1C, which is 16 to 49 people with underlying medical conditions or disabilities. So we are advocating, and the opportunity for advocacy is that people with disabilities who are going to be impacted be moved up from 1C into 1B. We think that can be operationalized by just stating any person who's receiving HCBS services are eligible. There are 10 home and community-based waivers in the state. And when we looked at the populations and who's being served with them, we added everybody up and we subtracted anybody who's 65 and over because they're already covered by the criteria. Subtract anybody who's 18 and under because they're not eligible for the vaccine. And by our estimates, there's about 400,000 people who are receiving home and community-based services that we think that's a good marker. It's a good indicator for the state to say the person's disability is severe enough to need these public services, therefore likely to be impacted adversely by COVID. The state's goal is to reduce deaths. We know that the deaths are severe. The state's goal is also around equity. We also think the HCBS marker is a good way to incorporate equity, as it really is at the crossroads of wealth, poverty, race, geography, and ability. So that's what we've been advocating, but we're having a bit of difficulty in getting that sort of understood. I think the healthcare system really wants something that's in their files. There's nothing in a medical record that says you're an HCBS services recipient, so they're having a tough time translating what that would actually mean. But I think there is still possibility for advocacy there. As you know, the distribution is happening through local county public health departments. In Marin, if they're setting up a committee to talk about who is eligible, I know there's a number of people on this call and in this town hall who have been active in advocating for a more inclusive approach. And I think you've had a lot of good success. So thank you. Thank you for that. There's a lot of concerns, a lot of questions. How are we going to recognize healthcare workers who work in homes rather than hospitals? How can the vaccines be done from home for people who can't leave home? How do we get people with disabilities recognized and higher priority? If the people who are providing the care are 1A, why are the people who are receiving the care 1C? By my count and my estimates, that's about 19 million people in that space. That's half of California. So people with disabilities who are severely impacted would need to wait for half of California first, at best. I just don't see how that fits with the state's own priorities. So it's a matter of working it out and getting it reconciled. Also, how safe is the vaccine? A lot of questions we want to know about safety. The biggest known risks around safety are about the allergic reactions. I've talked about that. So again, if somebody you know has specifically a diagnosis of anaphylaxis, or if you're allergic to the ingredients, you're recommended to not take the vaccine. To figure out if it's safe for you, really make the best decisions for yourself that are based on what you know about the vaccine, what you know about your own medical situation, and weigh it against what's unknown about the vaccine. Many health providers just kind of say, well, we know COVID's really bad for people with disabilities. And that you got to weigh that against the unknown about how dangerous the vaccine may be. It's a strange line and strange approach. But if you have questions or you're worried about how the vaccine may impact you, talk to the person who knows your health the best, who also knows the vaccine, to help reconcile that as to what's the best route for you. So with that, I'll say thank you. Thank you for the time. I hope I covered enough. I covered a lot. Probably took more time than you wanted. But thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Aaron, so much for that excellent presentation. It was very informative.
Epicenter is a series dedicated to community and public affairs in West Marin. If you have ideas for topics, email programming@kwmr.org. Epicenter is rebroadcast at 5 p.m. every Monday through Thursday. You can stream the audio archives of Epicenter shows on our homepage, kwmr.org.